Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Oh, there we are.
Yeah, that was good. It hadn't started
very yet. Dry programming, that Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, it was. My wife really likes it, and I think the reason why my wife really likes it is because I feel that it's very reminiscent of the arc of being a girl in some ways. Like everyone, when they start off, like all little girls, like all,
as you would know from top to bottom, the arc of being a girl.
We talked about this. It's that little girls like to be like Louise, you know, like. You know, like not taking any shit, you know, like it's like, screw you, I'm going to follow my own path. And then that when like a young woman wants to be like Tina. No, like, yeah, like Jean. No, they want to be like Tina, where it's like they have
I don't think anyone wants to be a really awkward person who's into horses.
But the thing is that she's so confident in everything that she does.
You're saying it's some sort of allegory for the development of a female?
Yeah, and then it's like, and then when you get older, you want to be like Linda, just so happy with your family, and you just don't give a shit. Like, yeah, your situation might not be great, but you just love life in and of itself. And all men are essentially just Gene and Bob, you know, just your young guy obsessed with farts, and then you're an old man just going, all right, I don't want to go out anywhere. I'm okay just staying home. It's like my favorite Bob's Burger quote of all time is it's like, all right, fine, I'll go, but I'm not but I'll be miserable the entire time and complain.
Yep.
I'm gonna complain about it. Hey everyone,
they riffed that for me, I guarantee. Yes. It
probably. Welcome to Game Classy, a little late edition. I think Steve and I are gonna record a little bit longer today, split this into two podcasts, so hopefully we'll get about 2 solid hours of content. So, Steve, anything interesting going on in your life lately?
Well, I mean, still going on with my diet, painting Nurgle toys. Yeah, it's just pretty good. I'm collecting video games that I'm not playing right now. Like a stack of games growing. I'm just like, because I pre-ordered all of them. I'm just like, huh, this game's coming out. And just like, well, I'm going to put that on the shelf. I'll play that someday.
Play some No Man's Sky. It'd be great.
No, it won't be great. That'll work if anyone's seen that video. The launch trailer video for No Man's Sky is very humorous. They have the footage, the E3 2014 footage, and it's like, it's beautiful, and there's lush jungles, and there's a bunch of dinosaur looking things and like other planes flying through the air, and it looks fucking sweet. And obviously the Jurassic Park theme is overlaid to it, and then it cuts and says release gameplay footage 2016. And it goes into the kazoo cover of the Jurassic Park song. And it's a fucking, it looks like a T-Rex, except it has really long, thin legs and arms, and their arms end in hooves. And it's walking on two legs and like kind of just like ambling about in different directions. And it's the only animal on the planet. It's funny. I don't know. It just, like those, like that is not my kind of game at all. Like those like go around, collect things, like zen out games. Like they're not. That's not my jam. I very much want direction. Like, I want a directive. I want to be like, oh, okay, so I need to go kill this guy. Cool. Like, that's the game. Great. You know, I like direct things. I don't like it's kind of why I don't like a lot of art house stuff. You know, it's just like, I get it, but it's not for me.
I've been playing a lot of World of Warcraft at 3 a.m. over the last few days. For those who are unaware,
they pulled you back in. Joe started playing World of Warcraft again. It's a pretty big deal.
Well, the reason that we had to delay the podcast, in case you don't know, you don't follow the Facebook page, is that I had another Hellspawn, another little child.
I figured it was because you had to hit a raid.
Yes, I had to hit a raid. And so I've been staying up pretty late, you know, with the baby, just playing some World of Warcraft. It's pretty good. Just sleeps in my lap while I play. I've gotten good at the one hand.
You want to just get to the papoose thing? You can just wear him.
I have one. He's still a little too small for that. You don't necessarily want to put the newborns in there. But yeah, so that's the reason why we're a little late. And I apologize to all the listeners who are like, screw you guys.
Actually, it was just you. They blamed you entirely.
It is all me entirely.
And someone on Twitter said told me to congratulate you on your spawn, and I told him not to encourage your malfeasance.
This is it, man. I'm gonna wait a few months, make sure this kid's all right in the head, and then I'm gonna become the Tropicana guy and all juice, no pulp. Just get that little snip, be happy with that, then be done. take a couple days off work.
You've already done more than enough damage with your carbon footprint by having not one but two children.
I know. I was just reading something today. I don't remember what news source I was reading it on, but they were saying, like, in order to best, you know, lower your carbon footprint, don't have children. And it's like, the people who are going to be worried about lowering their carbon footprint are the people who you want to have children.
Yeah, the best I saw the difference, an entire lifetime of living like carbon, like super conscious, I guess, is like 432 tons of carbon, like, not put in to the atmosphere. That's like, if you do everything,
I think
so,
it's
like,
the same. Yeah,
so that's if you do all the right things, like you prevent that. Not having one child is 9,342 tons. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. So see, I'm doing my part by not having infinite children. I am reducing my carbon footprint by infinite, which means I can drive gas-guzzling cars, eat a shit ton of meat, pollute, never recycle, and I still will have impacted the planet less than everyone who even had just one kid.
I think your numbers are a little flawed there, but
I'm gonna get someone to run the numbers for me.
He ran the numbers.
Yeah, let someone run the numbers. Grandma plays the numbers.
We're recording late at night, so that's why Steve's a little hyper. Normally, I try to catch him on the morning, so he's a little more subdued. Mm. But by the way, I'm not taking full blame for the late podcast, because my child was born on late Saturday night, and if we had recorded Saturday morning, we would have had it.
Mm. Fair.
Fair.
But Saturday was my Saturdays have been busy lately.
Yes, so I
things to do.
I'm assigning you
like 1/20th. I'll take 1/20th.
I'm giving you 25% blame.
That's
I'm giving you 25% blame.
These terms are untenable.
So I was at a friend's house, and it was just my kid wasn't scheduled till next till Saturday, the next, you know, next Saturday. And we were at the friend's house, and we're just, you know, goofing. We're having barbecue, eating some blueberry pie. And my wife's like, it's like 8 o'clock. My wife's like, I think we need to go. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's way past Penny's bedtime. Penny's my daughter. And she was like, my water broke. And I was like, oh, shit. So luckily my friend lived literally 5 minutes from the hospital, so we were able to drop her off. I was able to get all of our stuff and get back to the hospital in time. And she had the baby 15 minutes later. As soon as I got in, so I've been dealing with that.
Hmm.
All right, so I did kind of want to give a little bit of a Gen Con update.
As everyone's already gotten all the news.
All the news they need out of Gen Con. I'll give my little update. Steve got his Lamentations of the Flame Princess sweater jacket.
It's fucking great.
Sweatshirt.
I love it.
We're not allowed.
I will not reveal what the sweater is.
We're not allowed to talk about it. Like, seriously, like, the guy behind the counter, I don't know his name. I wish I knew it off the top of my head. He kind of looked like Spencer from Harmon Quest. It was
probably James Raggy.
I don't think it was. It wasn't like any of the guys who did any of the writing on the books.
Okay. Because James Raggy is the creator of the game.
Yeah, it wasn't him. Because okay. I was looking because I bought a copy.
I actually have no idea if that's how you pronounce his name, but that's how I read it.
I wanted I bought a copy of Flame Princess there. I was a little pissed off because they were cash only for some odd reason. They were the only booth at Gen Con who was cash only.
That makes sense. Just because of who they are, it makes sense.
I guess, but
they're
very
like almost Luddites, minus the fact they're really into PDFs.
Yeah. I mean, that was like, it was a little upsetting on that end, because I was just like, oh, well, that's kind of shitty, because I would have literally bought like a ton more of the books there from them so I could get some authors to sign it and things like that. But it was the main guy who wrote Lamentations wasn't there.
Okay.
So I was a little pissed off on that, but yeah, they were like cash only. I'm like, God damn it, Steve, motherfucker.
Hey, man.
Yeah, so I had to pay.
There's ATMs there.
I had to pay the ATM fees to get cash, but yeah, that was the one thing, and it was really funny because it was like right across from Lamentations of the Flame Princess was Kingdom Death, the Kingdom Death booth.
Nice, that's a really good like team up booth.
I know they kind of glowered at each other though. I think I don't know if there's necessarily a lot of if there's any love lost between them.
I don't know why they're both like very similar.
Yeah, and I didn't get to see Adam. He was running around like a crazy man.
Mr. Poots.
Yeah.
Poots himself.
It was so weird. Like, I would be walking around, and, like, I'd be at a booth, and I'd just be talking to guys. I didn't go there in any, like, podcast, like, I want to interview you for the podcast. You know, I just talk with them, see what's up. And every time I was at a booth talking to someone, inevitably a person would come up and be like, hi, I'm with the Crits to Hits podcast. That's probably a real podcast. It's like, you got some time to talk about your game on the cast? I'm like, What's going on? This is obnoxious. Like, no wonder why people don't like podcasts. No wonder why people don't like us. But I was talking with the guys at Arena Rex. They were doing great, too. So, Arena Rex, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking with the guys there, and I had told them at Adepticon. Well, beforehand, when I was just communicating with them, I'm like, you guys going to Adepticon? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, I don't know. This was through email. And I was like, you guys got to go to Adepticon. They went to Adepticon and sold out of everything. And I was like,
they crushed it.
And at Adepticon, I said, are you guys going to Gen Con? Oh, I don't know if we're going to Gen Con. I go to Gen Con.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there. They were selling.
I assume they crushed it at Gen Con as well.
You know, I didn't get to talk to them. I only saw them briefly, but they were doing fantastic. I mean, every booth there wasn't jam-packed with people. I mean, it was enough where you could walk around and do stuff. But it was like everyone seemed to be like with people.
Yeah, well, there was no growth on Gen Con this year, but it was full retention.
Yeah.
It was like 1% difference between last year, but towards the positive.
And
which is good.
And so I was talking with him. I was like, so Adepticon next year, you're doing a tournament. And he's like, I don't know. I was like, we're thinking about doing something fun. You know,
tournaments are fun.
I said, here's what we're going to do. Me and Steve are going to dress up like Roman emperors, and we're going to host your tournament. It's going to be a game classy hosted tournament. We're going to set it all up. We're going to make it Coliseum style. We'll get like make it a big round. We'll get 5 tables. We'll put the really nice table in the center, and you know, we'll have it all
need
set
a toga.
Up. Yeah. Well, I have one. And I said, me and Steve will dress up there.
I don't have a toga. Do I just go nude?
Yes. You'll be Emperor Caligula.
Hey, a Caligula is the emperor that I relate to the most.
Well, I was talking with some guys later at a bar later, and I was telling them about this idea, and they're like, I would play in the Caligula tournament. And I was like, that's what we'll call it. The Caligula's tournament. And Steve and I will be the emperors.
Nice.
Yeah, you could be Caligula. I'll be Nero.
I want my body rubbed in chocolate icing.
Yes. You just want to bring I will just in be the completely donkeys.
Covered
in,
no, I'll just be like from neck to toe, just covered in chocolate icing.
And I was like, I'll build a chaise. We'll get a chaise lounge for you to like lay on.
Perfect.
We'll have like a little tip cup for people to put in a dollar.
I need a manservant.
Well, that's the thing is what we'll do is we'll have like photo opportunities. Like you put a dollar in and like they could take up a big palm frond and like fan you for a few minutes.
Yes, fan me.
Yes. Or feed you grapes.
I'm in.
Yes. And that's what I was saying. Steve would absolutely love this.
Yeah, I'm in.
To be hedonism bot for
I'll have
the
my,
day.
I'll have my arena. I'll have some of my Arena Rex figures done in theory by Adepticon.
Yeah, it was. And I was like, if we do this, it will go down in legend. He's like, and the way they were describing it, because I was telling him I want to do like a game classy painting tournament where it's just the standard model. We do it per company, so it's like, okay, so we're doing this is Arena Rex category.
Mm-hmm.
You bring in your Arena Rex model, no conversions. It is a standard Arena Rex model,
a stock
model.
Yeah.
I got the only green stuff allowed is to fill gaps. If then I'm not gonna take off forget not gap fills.
I mean, obviously, like minor pose shifts would be some. If it's something unnoticeable, I'm not gonna.
Yeah, that's if it's unnoticeable, but I mean,
no
like,
scratch builds.
No scratch builds. No.
So like, you know, 80% of the model must be the stock.
And no crazy bases. Like the base has to be a relative
gaming base.
Just
a gaming base. I would make it that criteria, just a gaming base, because you can do a lot of cool stuff with gaming bases and they'll still be acceptable for gaming. So as long as it is a gaming base, I would say that's like
a warband for Arena Rex. And I would say like no display base. You don't get a display base. You know, you're going to be 5 figures and that's what it's going to be. And he was digging it. And I'm like, we got some traction on this. We should do this. And the way he was describing like how he wants to do the Arena Rex tournament, I was just like, oh, that sounds really, really cool. Like with giveaways and prizes and stuff like that. I'm like, that sounds fantastic. So that was like on the Gen Con. The Arena Rex stuff was great. The Kingdom Death stuff was great, too. God damn, that game's fucking expensive.
Yes.
I was talking like $350 for the fucking box set, the core box set. I was like, damn, I just kind of want a couple figures to paint.
Dude, the Kickstarter copies are going for shit ton of money on eBay.
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
Shit ton.
Which is really funny. Like, they had the game set up and they had the demos. I wasn't able to get a demo in because they were all pretty, you know, 3 people deep already.
Right.
And then, like, literally the next booth over was Dark Souls.
Oh, nice.
They
just kind of put all the theme guys together.
Well, but this is the problem. So it's Guild Ball, right? And there was a lot of people there playing Guild Ball. God knows why. But
because it found a spot where War Machine was bad and it attracted War Machine players.
Yeah, I mean, like, talk about
100% where it is,
the worst of the worst.
Yeah, it's
But so they had, they had the
Dark Souls.
Dark Souls, thank you. I was like, Dread Souls. I'm like, that's not right.
No.
So they had the, excuse me, I'm working off very little sleep. They had the Dark Souls, and it was one table. Like, that's it. That's all they had.
Nice.
And I couldn't even get in to see it because there were so many people around it.
That's kind of hype, though. Like, I mean, I like that.
I mean, it's hype, but it's just the one table. Like, you could spread it out a little bit and have more. So
like that's actually kind of a weird thing to me is, like, I'm not 100% sure why that would be such, like, a super crowded table, because that Kickstarter was so massive. I would assume that everyone there already, like, Kickstarted it.
Yeah, and they didn't have any of, like, the stuff for sale or a course or anything like
that.
Well, yeah. They just had all the stupid Dreadball or whatever the crap game is. That's right. It's a crap game.
Dreadball is the magic for sci-fi Blood Bowl. That's right.
Well, what's
Guild Ball?
Guild Ball. Guild Ball's bullshit. Yeah.
They're all bullshit. They're sports games.
Yes. Guild Ball does not get the Game Classy seal of approval.
It's a sports game. They all do not get it.
That's
all of them.
That's you can put that quote on your box, Guild Ball. You can put that quote on the box. It's Game Classy. It's sports ball.
Yeah. It's sports ball.
I also saw the guys from Soda Pop as well. Got to talk with them. Fucking Drop Fleet, man. God damn it, that game looks so nice.
Yeah, looks fucking sick.
I was talking with the creator and everything, and he was telling me, like, and he was saying, like, yeah, I tried to paint all the ships myself, but, you know, I just didn't have time. And I'm like, you painted these ships? He's like, yeah. I'm like, God damn it. These are fucking gorgeous looking. Oh, man. But yeah, he says it's coming out very, 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 very soon.
They do have the best spaceship miniature I've ever seen. That one gigantic, like,
everything in
human ship, like, all the ships are, that's the thing, all of their ships are great, but there's one specific battleship they have, and it is the coolest spaceship I've seen, period. Like, in all of sci-fi, it is the coolest fucking spaceship.
Well, it's not cooler than the NCC-1701.
It definitely is. It's fucking awesome looking. It's bad fucking ass. Like,
Is it better than the 1701A?
It's better than anything, any ship. It's better than any ship in Star Trek. But
is it better than the D? It's not better than the D.
Star Treks aren't warships though, so it's kind of like a weird. And it's like
the Defiant is.
The Defiant is, and Defiant's fucking cool. I don't know if it's as cool as the Defiant.
That's right. Or when you Klingon birds of prey.
Mm. Klingon ships are also cool. All right, there's a lot of cool sci-fi ships. Okay.
Speaking of Star Trek, fucking Ascendancy. Oh my god, that game blew my mind when I was looking at it. I mean, like, I didn't get too much of the gameplay into it, but just looking at it and seeing it out there and watching people play, I'm like, I like this game. It's apparently, like, in playing it, they, you know, you're getting the Romulans, the Klingons, and the Federation. The two expansions, you're getting the
Cardassian,
Ferengi, and the Cardassians. Yep. Those are the two expansions that are coming out.
Ferengi, yes.
So they can do five player. I'm probably thinking Borg will be soon.
Yeah.
It has a very, very...
I think the Borg might end up being an NPC enemy.
Could be.
I'd be interested to see if that plays that way.
It has a very Twilight Imperium feel to it, but doesn't play anything like it. No. Not at all. But it feels like every race is very, very specific and very, very unique and has its own ways of winning the game.
Klingons want to cling on their way to victory.
Through honor.
Yeah.
battle. It's next gen, so it would be through honor and battle.
Fucking Gowron.
What's wrong with Gowron?
He's dead. That's what's wrong with him.
He died. Yeah. He
gets killed by Worf in single-handed in man-to-man combat.
Yeah, he does. Okay. Well, because Worf saw him taking the Empire down the wrong path.
That's a saga that spans the Next Generation and DS9.
It does.
Pretty cool.
I'm a big Klingon fan.
Martok's the fucking jam, too.
Martok is the jam. Even though the Klingons become very, very one-note throughout the entire series, I do love them.
I mean, it's kind of hard to do, like, anything beyond... Like, that. The entire idea of Klingons is actually fairly shallow. It's like...
I know.
They're super honorable, and they have, like, ritualistic rituals.
Yeah.
I didn't know. They're
ritualistic culture.
Yes, they have a ritualistic culture. They're very much about honor. Like, they are fairly one-dimensional. Like, that's, but it's kind of cool. Like, they have some cool notes. Like, you know, they're like, poetry's a thing, and like, they're
Klingon opera.
The opera's a thing, and then they didn't delve into this too much. I know they touched on it a little bit. One of the things I liked is that everything is looked at as combat. So, like, a Klingon scientist who does not fight anyone with a batleth is still engaged in combat with the other scientists because they want to get the breakthrough first. They want to invent the weapon first. So, like, that's their battle, and everything is looked at as a battlefield.
Yeah, they didn't go too much into
it. Even teaching. It's like you want your students to be the best, because if your students are better than the other students, you win. You win that battle.
Yeah, I mean, they never go into that too deep into the Star Trek official canon. Mm.
Steve, yeah, we had a discussion in canon before the cast, and I'm of a mind that I think that there is essential and non-essential canon, and anything that is officially produced is canon as long as it's officially produced.
Yeah, I agree with you on 99% of that. My whole thing is that if it is, it has to be the original is canon for me. So our comment was on Tolkien, and I think that's a really great, a good discussion on it. I think only the stuff that Tolkien wrote is considered canon.
But then how do you, so that means a whole ton of Star Trek is not canon.
Well, and that's, I said there are some things that are different, because some things aren't just written by one person. So it's like in Star Trek,
there are many writers.
Yeah, in Star Trek, it would be the original series, the animated series, the movies, the, you know, next
first
gen.
Season of Next Gen.
For no, so, hey,
well, Roddenberry only worked on the first season.
No, he was there through season 4.
Was he?
Oh, yeah,
I thought he died season 2.
No, he died season 5 actually. Mm. But I mean, that would be Next Gen, and all of the main series, but like novels wouldn't count. Video games do not count. You know,
For me, I think anything that's officially branded in that mythos is canon.
Yeah.
But I do think the distinction between essential and non-essential canon is important. And I think when you're writing it as well, like, that's also super important. Because, like, for example, I think Shadow of Mordor is great. And I think Shadow of Mordor is Lord of the Rings canon. But it's so non-essential canon, because if you don't know the story of Shadow of Mordor, it doesn't actually matter.
Well, and that's
it's not the overarching story.
And that's why I say it's like, and part of the problem with Tolkien is that you have the Tolkien stuff, and then you have like Peter Jackson. You can't have them both be official canon, because stuff contradicts it.
Not particularly. If you go from the perspective of the story, The Hobbit, and the story, The Lord of the Rings, are supposed to be firsthand accounts of what happened. So, like, when you watch, so here's an example, like, to put in this perspective, let's just go with The Hobbit. You read The Hobbit book. Okay, the way it happened in the Hobbit book is the way it really happened. And the way it happened in the Hobbit movies is the way that Bilbo tells it. Or vice versa.
See,
like, you can go with that. You can go with that version, because that's the framework of the story.
But you're inputting your own view on it.
It's true. But that's the problem. A lot of stuff with Tolkien is, like, not super defined. Like, especially with the Silmarillion, where it's like, this happened. And it's like a really loose thing. It's like the elves moved to, like, the elves battled the orcs and moved here, and like, it happened over like 400 years.
I understand. It's hard for me to do, like, it's easier for me just to say, like, that all of that, that's not the stuff that Tolkien wrote.
For me, I would go the Silmarillion and the movies are canon.
Well, yeah, because you love the Silmarillion, you love the movies. For me, it's the books. It's, you know, it's even the Silmarillion I have some issue with, because it was written, it was published after his death.
It's a collection of notes. Yeah, it's more of a, I don't know what the hell you call it. It's like an appendices rather than like a
But
story.
I mean, it's at least they edited it very well. Yeah. It reads very, very well. But that's why it's tough for me. But anyway, so
one of the nice things about Tolkien though is there's a lot less content.
Oh yeah.
So
I mean, and I'm not shitting on the Peter Jackson movies. I love the Peter Jackson movies.
Both agree.
Yeah.
Few things we are in agreement upon.
Yeah, it's just for me, it's like, it's good, but it's not official. Like, I know some people who refuse to accept Star Wars Episode 7 as canon because it's not written by Lucas. Yeah, Lucas had nothing to do with it.
Well, I would say by your criteria, that way it would not be canon.
Well, no, it goes under the Star Trek thing where it's part of like the series that's being put out. It's easier to do with like novels.
Are you saying because of media? Because like the Star Wars have always been movies. So yeah. every movie that's a Star Wars is canon, but all the other stuff would be not canon.
That's yeah, like all of the books and everything. As much as I love the books, I love the Zahn books.
Not
but
canon.
They're not canon.
Okay.
They're not officially canon.
Because they're not Star Wars movies.
Yes.
So you're going with origin of media is where the con.
That's okay. That's a good way of putting it.
All right.
So like a good example is like.
So like the Avengers comic book is the only Avengers canon.
That's let's not
well,
get into
comics. Comics yeah. aside, being having 8 yeah. billion fucking universes.
Yeah, that's
like let's do.
Well, a good
Preacher. Preacher was a comic first and a TV show.
That's
the comic is canon.
Yes, 100%. A really good example is Jim Butcher's Dresden Files. Like the books are the canon. That weird TV show that lasted 2 seasons.
I like that show.
That's just weird fan fiction.
Yeah, I like
there.
That show. I had no idea. I knew nothing about it. I kind of liked the show, and I was like, all right.
I just like that the guy who plays Harry Dresden also plays the dad cop on Arrow, so that just makes me laugh every time I watch it. All right, so back to Gen Con. The other Star Trek game, they have Star Trek Panic? Castle Panic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looked cool.
I have it.
Yeah. It looks, and I was telling you, it looks really cheap.
Yeah, I mean, all the Panic games do. They're not expensive games. Their components are pretty cheap.
Yeah, I mean, Castle Panic looks pretty nice. I mean, the graphic design work on it.
It's the component. Well, I don't know. I'd have to look at them side by side, but the Panic games are not a series known for their, like, amazing components, but they're also inexpensive.
I would have loved, when I was looking at it, I was like, they should have done this the animated series. Like, so they had, like, all the animated series.
And the cat chick.
Yeah. She always purring for every 5 seconds.
No, just a cat chick.
And that dude with the three arms with the voice of Jimmy Doohan. He just
and that weird looking thing that eats tribbles.
That show had.
I love that show.
Jimmy Doohan did like every voice on
it's
that
me,
show.
Jimmy Doohan.
Yeah. All right. So that's on that one.
And I think Tyrellians were in the show as well, in the cartoon. They're like the weird, like they kind of have the pig nose thing.
Oh,
the
Tellurites.
Tellurites. That's right.
Yeah.
Tellurites.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, god damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the,
The Gorn Wars.
The Gorn Wars. Well, they also have the Kins... Mm-hmm. They're the fish cat people. Can't remember what they're called. But they're, like, from an actual guy's, like, book series that they just put into
cool.
the comic series.
And I think Andorians are in there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking love me some Andorians.
Who doesn't? When you cut off their little tentacles, they go all lopsided. I guess the big thing that I did was the Rune Wars minigame.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the thing that kind of made a lot of noise at Gen Con. Like people, it was like shocking. Like no one knew it was coming.
Oh yeah, it was completely under wraps.
Yeah. So let me go through this Rune Wars with you.
X-Wing plus Warhammer equals Rune Wars?
No, it's more like X-Wing plus Imperial Assault plus it's X-Wing plus Imperial Assault. With the free flow Warhammer feel equals this Rune Wars minis game. All right, so I'm gonna try and sell you on this game. I'm not gonna sell you on the game. I'm just gonna describe how to play it.
Okay.
All right. So like X-Wing, you have the little silly dials.
Thing. Yes.
And the dials, it shows your movement, so you can turn, go forward, and it tells. But next to each one of those little actions that you can do,
initiative.
There's initiative on there. So you have like 1 through 10. And that's important for the game. And on the other dial, because there's two dials on there, you have, like, a special action. So, like, you can get an auto hit, or you can get, like, cause, like, a panic or some other sort of action on the other unit, which is great. Or you can get, like, the little surge token. Because the game uses, of course, Fantasy Flight's proprietary dice.
And many tokens, I'm sure.
And there's not a ton.
Well, I guess there's not really a lot of tracking if you remove the models from the...
From the base, yeah.
The stands.
Yeah. So that's what it comes... Each unit comes in a 2x2 stand. So 4 guys per stand. And it's a proprietary base that links together.
And you remove the mans and then the stands as they empty?
So the way that it works is that if you have... Let's say you have a 2x2 block. So you have 4 stands, which would be 16 guys. Having 2... blocks in the front rank doubles your wounds that you cause. So you only roll 2 dice for the entire unit. So let's say you cause 2 wounds. Having the 2 stands in front will cause 4 wounds instead. The extra rank in the back allows you to reroll dice. For every rank that you have, you get to reroll 1 dice. So if you have 2 ranks, you get to reroll two dice. Pretty interesting on that end. Because you're not rolling more dice because you have more guys. You're just getting more bonus.
Quality rolls.
Yeah, quality rolls. So that's kind of cool. So the initiative system works is like you look at that little dial that's got the number on it, and it's alternating. So if I have, let's say you have your dial and your dial has a two on it, and my dial has a two on it. If you have the initiative in the turn, you go first. Then I would go. And then my whoever has the three would get to go. So even if you don't have a three and I have a three, I would get to go again because I'd have the next
one. It just ticks down.
Yeah. So it goes all the way up to 10. And some, like, I was playing the undead side. This other wiener guy was playing the human side. He was just like, it was like the most boring person in the world to play against. I'm like, because I'm asking questions. I'm like, all right, so this is like this, and this is like this. And the guy's like, do I just roll the dice now? I'm like, God damn it.
Perfect.
I killed him. Slaughtered him, by the way, in the demo game. And of course, you have like magic ability. So if you roll a surge on the dice, you get to use like some magic ability on it. Overall, not a terrible game. So what's going to make or break this game is going to be the price point.
$100 is the starter set.
Not bad. You get a ton of
ton of minis in there. I think the starter is absolutely priced to sell the game, but
how much per unit?
Units, right? That's where that's what it's going to come down to.
The other big problem I had with the game when I was looking at it, I played on it was not a 4x4 table. It was
probably 3x3. I have to imagine they're shooting for the same size as X-Wing.
I think it was a 3x3, and we played with the starter box set. It was tight. It was a very cramped game. So if you're looking for expanding it out, you're gonna need a bigger table. I think it has promise. The figures feel very 5th edition fantasy. Like, they're kind of bulky.
They looked like Warcraft to me. Yeah,
They look very Warcrafty. They looked like
big ass shoulder pads,
big
like
ham hands. Wide. Yeah. It was kind of fun playing that. And yes, when you lose a guy, it does get, you do get to
pop him off.
Yeah. You pull him off from there. And then, if I kill the guys, I get to dictate who gets removed. So that way, if you remove, you can remove a block. So because the block will remain, and you get the rank bonus until all of the guys are removed. So that in a little War Master style way there.
I like that. Like that.
So I mean, another cool thing is like the bigger guys, they have like a wound threshold. So let's say I was fighting this big rock golem guy.
Yeah.
He has a wound threshold of 3. So I had to cause 4 wounds in order to give him 1 wound.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that was interesting on that end. So I ran my little death worm up against him, and I kept on that special action token. I kept on giving him the auto wounds. So if I just caused the wounds, it would, you know, take over. And then there was another special rule with like these runes, these little plastic cards that he would flip up in the air, and however they landed would give us bonuses. It's interesting for sure, and as I say, it's going to be the price point that's going to make or break this game. Because if Fantasy Flight sells this game in Target, if they sell this game in Walmart, as well as LGS, people will play it. Because look at X-Wing. X-Wing is the most popular mini game out there now. Why?
But X-Wing's also pre-painted.
It's also pre-painted. You know,
there's no way they'd be able to offer the Rune Wars starter pre-painted for $100, though. Mm. Like, there's just not, that's not feasible.
And from what I hear, the packs are going to be unassembled. Unpainted, so you have to put everything together. So,
but I wonder if it's going to be push fit.
From what I saw, it probably is.
I don't think pre-painted is going to make or break it, because I think plenty of people don't care about painting. I've seen enough people in hobby wargaming who don't give a shit about painting their models.
Delanois.
If it's like the undead are white and the humans are blue, or if they just have like a tinted plastic, as long as they don't look exactly the same, I think people would also just be willing to play with it out of the box.
Yeah, it does look fantastic. Fantasy Flight was really on top of all things.
I wonder if they're gonna try and push people into a certain line of paints.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Because the natural assumption for me is that they would go with the army painter.
Yeah.
Because the army painter is already like buddy buddy with most companies that are producing minis games. Like, the army painters made stuff for Mantic and for Cool Mini. Like, they've done a bunch of the It seems like if you make a minis game and you don't have a paint line, like, your best friend is the army painter.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge fan of the army painter stuff.
And I love the army painter. I think I think they're if you want to do a base coat.
I see all your army painter paints right here.
If you want to do a base, I use army painter and GW are the paints I use.
Yeah.
If you want to do base coat, wash, highlight, highlight, the army painter is very good for that. If you want to do blending, I would not suggest the army painter.
it's just
a fact. Like, you need to use the tools that you need. So, like, what are you doing? That's an important part of painting, is like selecting the proper tools for the job. Like, example, Vallejo are a goddamn nightmare when you're trying to speed paint, because it's like fucking seventh layer of fucking purple, show up fucking purple, you know, because they're so thin, because they're made to do those like really smooth transitions and blends. And when you're painting, you know, speed tabletop, you want things to pop. So you want extremely harsh transitions. You want like that gray to be a very bright gray next to the dark gray, like to be obviously like where you can see it from 3 feet away. You can see where your layers are.
You kind of hurt me. My heart hurts just a little bit when you're describing that.
Why?
Just a little nice transition, man. That's all I'm asking for.
Nobody gives a shit about that when you're 3 feet away.
That's all I'm asking for, man.
And nobody gives a shit about that when you're 3 feet away. Mm-mm. Nobody cares.
Tim Lyson does.
Yeah, but that's because he's a fucking professional and spends all day painting insanely well.
Did you paint that?
Yeah, when you're trying to put models down on the table to look sweet as a whole, you know, you gotta decide.
Yeah, Fantasy Flight also had a ton of other stuff. They released a bunch of their new X-Wing stuff that's coming out. Nothing for Force Awakens or any of the new stuff in Armada, which is a little interesting.
Well, they're moving. They've got an entire new game for Force Awakens. They've got Destiny.
Yes.
So, did you see Destiny?
Wait, which one's Destiny?
That's the Dyson card game.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Blech. Blech.
I figured since you're all back into Star Wars again like a traitor, you'd be all like, oh, I'm going to play Destiny.
Hey, they make a good product. I'll buy it. That's what I'm saying, Mister. I wouldn't talk Age of Sigmar.
fuck that Star Wars. Star Wars is more egregious than Age of Sigmar. Although that being said, Rogue One does look pretty sweet.
Yeah, they are doing some ships for X-Wing. I don't know what of the Rogue One ships they're doing, but they are doing that. They released a bunch of new Imperial Assault stuff. They're doing Jabba's Palace next. They got a big Rancor and Jabba and all that fun stuff. Stormtroopers on jetpacks and stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, whatever. The best part about Star Wars is not Jedi, so that's why, you know, Rogue One looks good, and, you know, that's simple as that.
Yeah.
So as long as they do more things that are not related to Jedi, I'm down.
Well, that one cool blind samurai guy.
Yeah, like Force-sensitive dudes, like, that's fine. But just,
he's not Force-sensitive. He's just like, you know, I don't use the Force. It's just I believe the Force guides my life. Mm. I think that's his line or whatever.
Yeah, I know. It looks fucking, sweet. It's fucking Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker.
Looks awesome.
I get Forrest Whitaker when you talk about anime girls.
Nice. Oh. You get all King of Scotland.
I'm just like, I look like Idi Amin. Like, I'm having a stroke on my left side of my face.
Nice.
Yeah, so the Fantasy Flight was, if I had to pick a winner of Gen Con.
Looney Labs, obviously.
What do they do?
You do Flux.
Oh, Flux, yeah. I would say Fantasy Flight usually... I think they've taken the crown. I didn't go last year, but the last few years I went, I think... You know, they always have the biggest line. They always do... I mean,
Fantasy Flight's like... They're a...
Can I tell you how sad Paizo was this year?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that booth was relatively empty. Every time I went by it...
Ouch. Are you really feeling it?
I don't know.
They're feeling that D&D.
And that's the funny thing is, like, I didn't even see Wizards of the Coast stuff there.
I'm sure they were there.
Well, they usually have their own little separate section.
Although I don't actually remember Paizo having a gigantic booth. I remember there being the Pathfinder Society room, which was absolutely gigantic.
No, they have a pretty big booth for at least Gen Con size. They're pretty big. And it was relatively empty because I went there to go check on the pre-paints that you were talking about, that you were asking about.
They're supposed to be fucking awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I mean, like, for buying a pre-paint,
They're supposed to be hard plastic as well.
I didn't feel them or anything like that.
To catch the listeners up on what we're talking about is that I'm sure most people know that WizKids produces those flimsy, I don't know what they're like, rubber plastic, like the shit that the HeroClix are made out of.
Yeah.
Well, they produce that line for Pathfinder and for D&D of those minis and the pre-paints. And, like, they're functional. Don't get me wrong. Like, they work fine. And I actually do endorse them. If you want to use minis for a D&D game, I very much endorse and condone you using the pre-paints. Because if you try to paint your own models for a D&D campaign, it will do nothing but frustrate you. So I definitely condone that. I would more encourage you to use the Pathfinder Pawns collections, because I think that is the definitive best RPG product for doing map-based battles that exists, period, because it's super fast, it stores really well, the illustrations are great, and it's super functional. Fan-fucking-tastic. The Pathfinder Pawn series is my favorite. But anyway, if you really want that 3D feel, because there is something to have, like, the minis, you know?
Yeah.
That's, like, a thing for people. So they make those, and, like, they're crappy. Like, there's no doubt. Like, they're crappy. They're not bad. Like, the sculpts aren't terrible, but, like, the paint jobs are bad, and, like, your swords are going to be bent. Like, you're going to pull the barbarian out, and his sword's going to be, like a crescent moon
left. Whoa. Why are you having a barbarian that doesn't have an axe?
Because a lot of barbarians have swords, dude. Conan uses a fucking sword.
Yeah, but
Conan uses a great sword.
But Conan
is the barbarian, and he uses a sword.
But Conan,
sir.
Conan is not only a barbarian. He's an adventurer.
He also uses an axe, too.
He's the strongest warrior ever.
So what they have done... oh, and of course, they come in... The biggest complaint, the gripe I have is there's... And there's no good middle ground because they've tried both. But the gripe I've had about the pre-paints is that they come in blind box boosters. So you're like, I hope I get the guys I want. Which made more sense when it was also a minis game. Because then you had, like, chase figures. Like, it was like magic.
Yeah.
It's not that way anymore. They're just blind boxes because that's what people are used to. They did try to do visible boxes, and they did not go over very well. But I think that was more or less the packaging rather than the...
Well, and that's always been the problem, because it's like, maybe I don't want maybe I want like 20 goblins. Just sell me a fucking box of 20 goblins.
Right. Yeah. So, but anyway, so the new thing is they're going to be supposedly hard plastic, so very easy to paint and not all bendy and flimsy. D&D and Pathfinder minis that are fully sculpted, primed with Vallejo paint,
ready
to paint on. And in non-random boxes. So, like, there will be a box of adventurers, and it's going to be a bunch of pre-painted adventurers, or pre-primed adventurer minis. And then there'll be, like, the dungeon denizens, and it'll be, like, 5 skeletons, 5 goblins, 3 rats, whatever, like, in a box. And that was, like, when they got announced, like, that was, like, a huge deal. People were really excited about it, so... We will see. And I think that's like really good middle ground, because if you want to paint for funsies but also want to use something functional for your D&D games, that's going to be the best, because you just grab some of those, paint them if you want. If not, they're real cheap.
Yeah. I mean, they looked fine. They, you know, standard minis to me. I wasn't like, oh, these are great. But, you know, whatever. I'm kind of used to, like, Reaper anyway, so sure. They kind of reminded me of that.
Well, I mean, minis have gotten to the point where, like, every mini is, like, if it's not... like a wargaming mini, like, they're all at a certain level of quality, and, like, people don't really go below that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's... Well, no, there are some companies that I saw that when I was there, I was like, ooh.
Well, I mean, outside of, like, really indie companies.
Yeah.
Like, if there's an accepted industry standard that, like, you're expected to be at. And, like, I think everyone has their, like... Impact's a really good example of that. Like, Impact, like, their minis aren't really exciting. They're not really that great, except... their chibi range is unparalleled. It's super good, super diverse, has a shit ton of options. That's they found their thing.
And they also make a roller derby game.
They do.
Which is a sports game I could probably get behind.
Yeah, I can get on that.
Get like a girl orc on roller skates going around. Why not?
Yeah, but their chibi series is fan-fucking-tastic.
Oh, yeah, but they do My Little Pony. So.
Well, I mean, not everyone's perfect, and people do buy pony shit.
People love pony shit.
So, like, so that's the thing, and I think a lot of minis companies can find that, like, thing. I think it's Mantic's below the quality of, like Mantic's definitely subpar.
Yeah, but Mantic does multi-part plastics, which is a little different.
Yeah, it's true. And also, their quality is vastly different based on what model you're talking.
Well, I mean, their early stuff. You can't fault them on their early stuff.
Sure.
But, I mean, like, their newer stuff, a lot of their sci-fi stuff looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that
and the Naylids look really cool too. They have a new they're like an aquatic, they're like a King Triton army. Sorta, yeah. They look real good. Yeah, they look real good. And their new Tomb Kings do not look good.
The Fucking Murlocs, man. Playing World of Warcraft, you just hear that, you're like, God damn it. Fucking World of Warcraft.
Matt Murlock. I can't see.
No, it's my city.
I would never kill anyone.
You can't protect her, Matt.
Matt Murlock. I just came up with that now. I did not steal it from anyone. That is an original creation.
It's funny. And it's being sleep deprived. That is hysterical.
Yeah,
I also checked out the Chaosium booth. The Call of Cthulhu stuff looked great. They fucking had Murder and a Horror on the Orient Express for super cheap in comparison to what it is. And I was like, I already spent like a shit ton of money, so I did not buy it. I was kicking myself in the ass. But they did show a little bit of preview of Gloriantha, the new, it's kind of like Cthulhu Wars.
Yeah.
But it's for their Gloriantha, whatever. That guy who did it, guy who's been with Chaosium forever, he's doing the game. And it's just like that.
Did you check out the Star Trek RPG?
I did. Okay, so
speaking of which, I gotta get rid of my Decipher books now.
Wait, oh, no, you don't.
Yeah, I do. What do I need them for? I'm gonna play the new stuff, baby.
Okay, so I don't know if you dug too much into this, but I know I was texting you.
I know all about the beta. Yeah, where you choose your ship.
The fucking beta is insane. Okay, so for the listeners, the beta for this is they are essentially letting you pick what type of ship you want to have. So you could pick if you're a science ship, if you are an exploratory ship, if you're a warship. You get to pick the type of ship that you want to be. I think there's something like 5 different types of ships. And you send that, and if you get into the beta, what company is doing it?
I can't remember the name of their company, because they do the Mutant Chronicles RPG.
Yeah.
Their system's called the 2D20.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Mophius, more.
Oh,
Mobidius.
It's Mobidius.
It's a weird M name.
Yeah, no, I think it's Mobidius. So you mail that to them, and if you're in the beta, they will send you a specifically made, like adventure module for your type of ship, and they're all interlinked. So everyone who's playing in this beta, they get a very specific module that plays along this story arc for like a couple months. And then afterwards, after that's done, all of the stuff will have linked together, and they will have, it's a big payoff at the end for it.
Well, yeah, and as the results get reported from all the groups, they're going to compile that into guiding the storyline.
Oh my God, it sounds so fantastic.
And that's going to be the baseline story for the game when it launches.
Yes, it sounds so great.
Pretty exciting.
Yes. I mean, it's pretty tight. They didn't have a ton of stuff there to really... for the Star Trek stuff, but they were answering a lot of questions.
I didn't imagine they would have a ton, because they just announced it shortly before Gen Con.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited about it. I think that would be super fun to play in.
Did you see the Games Workshop booth? I heard they were there.
They were there. They had a tiny, tiny, tiny booth.
That's awesome.
It was so small. It was wee.
Which is hilarious because of how, like, their Games Workshop is a massive gaming company.
Well,
like, they're worth a shit ton of money.
Games Plus was there, and their booth was bigger than Games Workshop's.
Well, I mean, I don't think Games Workshop's there to sell shit. They're there to promote their, you know, their game.
They were there literally for Age of Sigmar. That was it. Like, they barely had anything with 40K.
Yeah.
They had one guy running demo 40K. Games for Age of Sigmar.
They need to promote 40K. They need to get Age of Sigmar moving. And, I mean, as someone who shat upon Age of Sigmar mightily, I think that the General's Compendium did a lot for it.
Yeah, and of course Forge World was there and everything.
Sure.
Like that. But yeah, Games Workshop was there in tiny force. It was a wee booth. But yeah, the great thing was everything was looking fantastic. Everyone had people at their booth. I think someone had actually asked me like who looked really sad there, and I was like,
yeah,
no.
Someone said saddest booth.
And there really was no, like, super sad...
Paizo.
Well, Paizo was kind of sad. But you know what? I was there a little later in the day. They could have been, like, super busy in the morning. And just by the end of the day, they were kind of empty. But they were not super empty. You know what was great this year that I highly recommend for anybody going out to Gen Con or any convention nowadays is I did Airbnb this year. You ever done an Airbnb?
Nope. I usually stay in hotels, but...
Well, I mean, I do too, but I mean, Indianapolis, you're charging $350.
Well, Indianapolis is a shithole, so there's that.
It's $350 a night. I took a chance, and I did Airbnb, looked into it, found a place that was in a nicer neighborhood, and it only cost me like $70 for the night. I'm like, that's unparalleled. And it was like a great guest room with like its own private bath and everything like that. I was like, I could not,
pretty sweet.
I could not ask for anything more. And I was talking with this with some people at the convention. They were saying that they did the same thing they say at Airbnb, and then they take Uber in. And I'm like, well, shit, I should have fucking done that. Because I was an idiot and paid for parking. I'm like, I could have just done the Uber. And
you could have done the app-based vacation.
Vacation, yeah. Appcation. I'm kind of anti like Uber and Airbnb for a long time because I'm like, I don't like the idea of like our economy being this shitty that people got to rent out their own shit just to make some money. But
On the one hand, yes. But on the other hand, no. Like on the one hand, I do like the fact that people can make money.
Yeah.
The key is I think it's great if it's extra money. I think if it becomes people's sole source of income, that's kind of rough. But I bet for the people who have it as their sole source of income, they're probably happier that they have it than nothing.
Yeah, I guess you're absolutely right.
It is a touchy subject now, especially because I know there's a lot of people that, you know, there's violating labor law, but there's a lot of things going on right now. But I'm going to say the people who have it probably feel they're better off than having nothing.
Okay, this is what we do next year. We go down to Gen Con, me and you. I will drive around, do Uber.
But I don't want to go to Indiana.
Well, no. We'll just do it for like, let's say we'll do it on Friday. Me and you will go down on Friday. We'll drive around and we'll do the podcast from the car, interviewing people as they get into our car from Gen Con.
So, comedians in cars getting coffee.
Yeah. And we'll just like
classyites in cars getting
talking games.
No, what's a word? What's
getting cannoli?
Getting cannoli. Yeah, there we go.
So what do you go to Gen Con for? I wanted to get some new cards for Yu-Gi-Oh.
That's stupid. Get out of the car.
Get out of the car. Get out of the car.
Just kick them out of the car wherever they are. It's like, this is a really bad neighborhood. Yep, and you're getting out of the car right now.
I'm giving you one star in Uber.
That's right. That's what you get for doing the Yugi.
For doing the Yugi.
Don't do Yugi, kids. It's bad for you.
It's bad for you. No, I would never do that. People would be like, that's a great idea. You should do that. No, I don't want to fucking work at Gen Con. I enjoy wandering around the gaming convention looking at stupid shit.
Yeah,
I actually did not do speed painting this year, which was kind of sad, but it was like the convention was so big that I just did not have the time to go do everything that I wanted to do. And I got so drunk on a Friday night. I was supposed to go play Drunk Quest with the Soda Pop guys. And I was just like, I can't play. I'm too drunk already.
That's awesome.
By the time it started, I was gone. So that's about it for like the first half of the podcast. So I'm going to put a break here. And then we will go on and do the next part where I'm going to answer some questions that people had about Gen Con. All right, so go to PlanetArbitrary.com for your Planet Arbitrary needs. You can follow Steve at Twitter at
PlayOnSteve.
You can follow me at GameClassy. At Planet Arbitrary. Like our Facebook page.
There is no at GameClassy.
I'm so tired. GameClassy podcast, / GameClassy podcast. Best way to help out the podcast, like, comment, subscribe on iTunes. You could look at us up on the YouTubes and give us the 5 stars on iTunes. So, Steve, until next time, until the second part of this damn podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say it should be like right now. Ho, ho, ho. Green giant. I got nothing.
Game Classy.